Blog Talk Radio.
People make the world go round.
Okay, let's try this again. Hello, you're listening to the Gist of Freedom blog show.
And this is Philip Ostergaard.
Great, and I am Leslie Gist, and let's get your show started right away. Mr. Ostergaard, could you explain to the audience why you wrote the book and the title of the book?
Yes, I wrote the book because I've worked all my life with boys and girls. That's my whole life. Developing an organization that has today 1,000 children involved every day. But I found in schools they do not know how what a wonderful man Abraham Lincoln was. They take some aspects of his life, but they do not realize that he was a man that prayed and that expected God and asked God to help him, and that he gave credit to God for making the, or helping him win the Civil War. A book is entitled The Inspired Wisdom of Abraham Lincoln, and the subtitle is How the Bible shaped the presidency of the United States.
Okay, you mentioned young children. How do you think public schools can use your book as part of your curriculum if you are focusing on religion?
Well, they have a hard time in public schools. Most of them do not allow teaching like this, unfortunately. I do have some schools like charter schools and private schools, and the main thing is I like to see parents have a book like this, and because it's not a technical book, it's a book that any boy or girl that can read, a sixth grade reader easily can read this book. And it's a good book for parents to have so that their children can know exactly what Abraham Lincoln believed.
Now, if Lincoln was alive today, what would you think he would say about these policies of keeping faith out of the schools, especially when it talks about, when you're talking about his faith?
Teaching I mean, not teaching religion in the schools?
Right. And not religion, more or less faith. I try to separate.
Faith, all right, faith, that's right. That I didn't. Yes, I think Abraham Lincoln very definitely would. You see, our country was founded on a belief in God. And our forefathers, we gave God credit for that. And we need to teach our children, even if you don't believe something, you still need to teach your children why our country believes what we do believe. If I went to a foreign country that, say, worshiped Buddha, I would want to know a little bit about the history of Buddha. That doesn't mean that I would become a Buddhist. But I would owe it to myself to find out the history of the country where I'm living. And the Bible had great influence in our early training and all our Western movement. People believed the Bible and they taught the Bible, and we need to acknowledge that.
All right. Now, some of the first books that influenced Abraham Lincoln besides the Bible, let's start with the Bible.
Yes.
What passages of scriptures did you learn that was important to Abraham Lincoln?
Well, he read the stories. Like the stories of Genesis are very important to him, and Exodus, and he read a great deal about the tabernacle coming out of when they came out of that's in the Bible telling about when they came out of Egypt, and he read the Psalms. He read the book of Job, and he read, of course, the teachings of the Lord Jesus and his parables.
One of his most famous speeches, a lot of people like to quote, is the speech about, separation. I'm sorry, I lost the words. Oh, boy, and I have this speech on my YouTube channel.
It's separation of church and state?
No, the country, divided.
Oh, the divided country. The border states?
A house divided speech, I'm sorry.
Oh, yes, the house divided.
Now, that reference scripture, can you explain the significance of the house divided speech? And
yes. When I lecture, I have two little wooden frames of a begin showing of a house with pillars, a house of justice. And one is the one that the North had, and at the same time, the South, they had a skewed house of justice. Their pillars in my little illustration are go at an angle. They're not straight. But our country, when we first began, decided we were going to have both of them in our country because we did not want to have just one. We wanted one country. If we decided to have two countries, it would have been a terrible thing for the slaves because they would have never had a chance. But we had a divided country because we wanted to include everybody in our country. When it came to Lincoln's time, then that house dividing was falling apart. And it did fall apart. It just separated. And the southern states, they went their own way and left the Union to go its way.
Okay. So what did he say in his speech that was so popular?
Oh, he said that our country just could not exist, both wanting slavery with slavery and non-slavery just would not work any longer. The time had come and the country was going to fall one way or the other. Either we would have all slaves or we would not have no slavery. And that's what he declared in his divided house, divided speech. And of course that created a terrible flame all over the country, the idea of a country having to fall one way or the other.
Okay. And do you know the scripture that he was referencing when he talks about?
Oh, yes. Yes, he. There's a reference to the house in the New Testament there. Both Matthew, Mark, and Luke, all three mention about the house divided, speaking of the house of Satan and the house of God. They divide. Lincoln took the idea. He wasn't thinking of a house of Satan, but he took the idea from the scriptures, yes, from Jesus' illustration.
Okay. So you don't think that when he was referencing the house of Satan as the South and slavery?
Well, he believed it is wrong. no question about it. He believed it was absolutely wrong, but he didn't. He was a very wonderful man, and he wanted to win the cause. He wanted to win so all men would be free, and he wouldn't. You don't do that by making people angry.
Right.
You do it by reasoning with people. And for him to say, call the slavery people house of the devil or something, that'd make them mad. He had one wonderful idea. And, you know, one thing that he did that President Obama would certainly be in favor of doing, if Obama had been at that time, he would exactly what Lincoln did. Lincoln's idea was, let the government buy all the slaves. And Lincoln favored that. He said, wouldn't that have been a wonderful idea? Instead of spending millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars on a war to buy all kinds of guns and blow people up and have men get 400,000 men died and thousands more with their wounds of all kinds, if we just bought the slaves and then we paid the masters the money, now they could start a regular business. That was a marvelous idea. And I'm sure that Obama would have believed that idea because it's so sensible.
Now, the Confiscation Act, are you familiar?
Yes, I am.
With him wrestling between the Confiscation
yes.
Act and
however, the Confiscation Act.
Compare the two between the Confiscation
there are two of,
Act and
right.
Emancipation.
And they are quite complicated. Laws that Congress makes are quite complicated. And what might be a very desirable thing also has other things that are not quite so agreeable with it. But let's back up just a little bit. When Lincoln became president, the South had already gone and started their own country. And the North, of course, was fighting the South. And the two armies were about equal. They were so equal they fought for 3 years, and one side win and the other side three. They're very equal. However, right between those countries, there were five states, Missouri and Kentucky and Delaware and Rhode Island and a part of Virginia, that stayed neutral. Now, these neutral states, as soon as Lincoln got into presidency, he realized that if we're going to win the war, the easiest way to win the war is to keep the neutral states neutral. We must keep them in the middle. If we can keep them from going to the South, we can win. If they go to the South, well, everything is lost. If you had been a slave or someone had been a slave in Kentucky, naturally, Kentucky stayed with the Union or stayed neutral. If it had gone to the South, and the South would have won, you'd have been a slave forever. And so the slaves of Kentucky really, really wanted Kentucky to stay neutral. And that's exactly what Lincoln wanted. He was a very wonderful man in being able to talk to the states and deal with the states and keep them on the side of the Union. And as he did that, that made them stay so they could win the war. Now, once in a while, something happened, the Confiscation Act and some of these different acts Lincoln had to, he made a promise. He said to the leaders of Kentucky, if you will just stay neutral, don't go with us, you stay neutral, then I will not touch your slaves at all. I'll leave them just exactly like they are until this is all over. Then we can talk about something else. Maybe we can just buy them. That's his, and they bought that. They believed Lincoln. And he stayed right by his word. The one thing I really love about Lincoln, he believed when he made a bargain, he stayed with it. And those people knew that Lincoln would keep it. And therefore, they were willing to stay neutral. And
now, what was Frederick Douglass's and Charles Sumner's and the abolitionist's opinion of him?
Frederick Douglass?
Yes. With
Frederick Douglass, when he first met Lincoln, thought that Lincoln was wrong about some things. He really thought...
What about the Confiscation Act? Was he...
Yes, about the Confiscation Act and some other things. He thought that Lincoln was not as anti-slavery as he ought to be. However, later on, when Douglas met Lincoln, he was surprised because he said, Lincoln is not above me at all. He's just exactly, I'm a man just like he is. And but the reason that Lincoln was not in favor of the Confiscation Acts was that it would have been so that the border states might have wanted to go and join the Confederacy, and that would have lost everything. It would have if Kentucky had gone south because of the Confiscation Act, it would have just lost everything. And so that's Lincoln wanted to help the slave, but he was afraid that that would make it harder to keep the border states within the Union.
Now, I'm a little confused. Didn't he use the Confiscation Act against the slave states, though? And that's how the slaves were, they called them contraband?
Yes.
So he did apply it to some states, just not
border
states. Well,
it's, like I said, it's a complicated act. And it came into effect when when the North was able to win a war, they were able to set the slaves free. But Lincoln wanted to do everything from a legal standpoint and do it exactly right. Then it'd be done forever. He didn't want to have something that could be backfire and cause more trouble. And he felt that the Confiscation Act really did not help him win the war. And he wanted to win the war. That's the important thing to him.
I
realize it's complicated, very complicated.
It's complicated, but I discovered that people like Frederick Douglass and Charles Sumner, they felt that the Confiscation Act was validating the slaves, slavers' belief that slaves were property, human beings were property, and that the human beings fell under the same law as cattle or furniture or any other property. So I think they had an issue with that morally, by saying, you know, if you use the Confiscation Act, you're really justifying their beliefs is that this is a moral operation.
Yes, I'm very sorry I can't.
No, you did a great job with explaining
a little better.
I will
say this to you, mm-hmm. that Lincoln did not believe that a slave was property. He totally against that. He believed that a man was one thing about him. He really believed that a man was a free man, and he totally rejected the other idea. But he was interested in taking the steps that would lead to winning the war. That is the most important thing. What can I do to win this war? And I don't want to do something that's going to harm one of these states and make them turn against us.
And winning the war, when we say winning the war meant what to Lincoln?
Oh,
who would
winning the war
from,
would
from
be...
the war being won.
War being so that the South would have to stop their fighting. And then
Go
they
on.
Could... Then they could make a new, then they could pass a law giving freedom to everybody.
Well, the Homestead Act and the Northwest Ordinance, wasn't that part of this war? Whereas you had the Southerners monopolizing all of the land, all of the new land that was purchased by the country, and this would allow the poor whites in these parts of the country to be able to settle and live freely as the rich Southern slavers. Wasn't that at the heart, the Homestead Act?
Well, you have me a little bit puzzled there.
Okay.
I don't recall that very clearly mm-hmm. because, but I think that you'll find that I don't know exactly how to answer. I'm very sorry.
Let's skip that. I have another question about William Henry Gist, and I don't know if you know. I wrote a book about the Underground Railroad, about the Gist, the white Gist, and the black African-American guest.
Yes.
Now, this William, you mentioned very early in the interview that when he became president, Lincoln became president, he had border states lining up on one side, southern governors. Could you just tell the audience the role that William Henry Gist, the slaveholder of South Carolina, played throughout this whole election of Lincoln's?
Oh, my. I'm very sorry that I'm not as acquainted with that.
Okay. It's okay.
I'm very sorry. I did read that.
Mm-hmm. What I was hoping that you would say was that he wrote a letter to the
yes.
Southern governor saying that if he did win the election, that they were going to start a war. Exactly what they did. Maybe we could go there. Can you talk about the war, how it was started?
Well, yes. The war, as soon as Lincoln was elected president, which was in November of 1860, the states, southern states, they began seceding one by one, and they met in Charleston, and they formulated their government. And Lincoln, at that time, had a very good friend, and his friend was actually one of the leaders of the government, and stood up and tried to defend Lincoln, and said the when they were making their election down in Charleston, defending Lincoln as being very square and honest, and they ought to give him a chance. But of course, the other states, they just overrode Lincoln's friend and went ahead and made their government. And so by the time Lincoln was elected president, or took the oath of office, they'd already been having a country now for about 4 months down south. And of course, the war began when Lincoln knew they needed to reinforce the little island out in the border there of Charleston and the fort. And when Lincoln tried to do that, well, of course, they fought on it, so the war had to begin. But
that's very interesting. Now, I had a question about you. If you could list three great revelations you learned while researching this book, what would they be?
Well, the main thing I've really appreciated about Lincoln is that he was no better than any other man that ever lived. Whenever a man met him, Lincoln was on that man's level. Whether it was a very poor man or a black man or a white man or a woman, he was on the level. He's not above them. And that's a very great trait. A second great thing about him is his word was so solid. When he promised something, he would do it. And even his lifetime enemy, protagonist, which was, of course, Stephen Douglas, and they'd been political enemies all their lifetime. Stephen Douglas said, Lincoln is an honest man. And you know, Matt, how different that is from today. We have people that are different in opinion, but they don't respect each other. They had to respect Lincoln. And that's, of course, a very great trait in his life. That another great thing about him, he made his bad mistakes, and he made some very serious mistakes. But when he made a mistake, he could face himself and say, I'm not going to do this again. And he could change his way of life. And that's a marvelous trait for any person to have, to be able to correct your own life.
Why did they call him Honest Abe?
Why?
Mm-hmm. You know the story
behind. They called him Honest Abe because when he was in Springfield or New Salem, he owned a little store. And his partner died. And his partner owed some money. Well, Lincoln could have just walked away. The average person would have just walked away, but not Lincoln. Lincoln took his partner's bills and said, we're going to pay them. And as to him, he called it a national debt. And it took him a long time to pay it, but he finally paid back every penny that his partner owed. And because of that, he established his reputation. Honest Abe, people around knew and recognized there's a man who won't walk away from a problem. He'll stay right with it.
Wonderful. Now, one of my favorite movies about Lincoln is called Abe Lincoln in Illinois. Are you familiar with that movie?
Not the movie, no, but I've read books about that, of course.
Okay. I have it on YouTube, a 10-minute clip. There is a scene where he is debating Stephen Douglas. And he talks about, I think it is the House of Rider speech. He talks about slavery.
Yes.
And all those thoughts. So I was just wondering if you have any favorite Lincoln movies. Would you recommend to a teacher or a class?
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't have a favorite movie.
Besides your book, then, any books that you would recommend? And let's talk about, you know, give you the title of your book one more time.
Yes. The title of my book is The Inspired Wisdom of Abraham Lincoln. And the subtitle is How Faith Shaped an American President and Changed the Course of a Nation. In other words, how his faith in God helped him to win the presidency and change the course of a nation, because he brought our nation back together again when it was completely divided. And he saved the whole black race. My, his work and his ideas in the end ended slavery, which is a marvelous thing. That's what he would say was his greatest work.
Okay. Well, how long did it take President Lincoln to decide to allow the slaves to participate in the war and then to emancipate them?
All right. There's a good reason for him not allowing the slaves to participate in the war. The very good reason. Remember, he wanted, first of all, to win the war. That's the main thing.
And he didn't care if he won the war. Winning the war didn't mean
you would think
that.
They didn't use the black soldiers. They would have helped him.
No, well, I'm trying to find out if winning the war automatically meant that the slaves would be free.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it mean that they would be, you see, he had no power to free the slaves because he's president. A president cannot change the Constitution. He cannot do it. But winning the war, he could have a vote, and the people can change the Constitution. Abraham Lincoln had no power. He said, I have the Constitution. When we win the war, we can put it to vote, and then we can change the Constitution and allow that'll forbid slavery.
Are you there?
Yes, I'm right here.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, there's one other point I started to make there, and I've forgotten exactly where I was.
Okay, that's okay. You were excited about the question. It's okay.
Yeah.
We'll talk about his religious views again.
Is what?
Last time we spoke about Lincoln, you stated that he had dabbled in atheism.
Yes, he had. But actually, you see, Abraham Lincoln began as a child, and his mother taught him he learned how to read the Bible, and he absorbed the wonderful passages in the Bible and the teachings of Jesus. And when he became about 21 years of age, he went out of the wilderness and into this little community of New Salem, and there he met some people that did not believe in God, who were atheists. Now, I almost admire Lincoln in this because he wanted to read. He wanted to know what people think, and he began to think, well, maybe Mother was wrong when she taught me about the Bible. And he read about these men, and they did influence him. And for quite a while, he was really an unbeliever. He thought maybe the Bible isn't true. And he was, for 15 years, felt like that. He never said anything against the Bible. He quoted it still. But about 15 years later, the school of life life itself is a very hard teacher. You have your ups and downs and your failures. And then he saw what men are like. And he realized that this atheistic philosophy was very bad. And he realized that there must be a God in heaven. And then he had a boy that died. And he began to think, where's my boy? His mother would have said the boy had gone to heaven. But these atheists didn't believe that. And then he began to read the Bible again. And this time he began to read it, and he began going to church, and he became a very, very strong believer. Came back to his mother's faith. I don't think any president has ever made the statements that Lincoln made. When he was elected president, the country is hopelessly divided. There was no way, no man could have brought our country back together again. But Lincoln said this, without God's help, I can do nothing.
Wow, that's
with God's help, I cannot fail. Now, that is a marvelous statement. And that became kind of a motto in his life. And he made that several times. Without God's help, I cannot succeed. With his help, I cannot fail. And he stood before Congress and declared that by the help of God, we're going to win. And as time went on, he wrote marvelous statements to his people. Let me read one passage here that he wrote when he called without prayer. Now, did you ever hear a president say this? Just listen to this marvelous statement. This is what he wrote to the people of the United States. We have been preserved these many years in peace and prosperity. We have grown in numbers, wealth, and power as no other nation has ever grown, but we have forgotten God. And Leslie, that pictures our country today. We have forgotten the gracious hand that preserved us in peace and multiplied, enriched, and strengthened us. And we have vainly imagined in the deceitfulness of our heart. Can you imagine a president talking like this? That all the blessings were produced by some superior and virtue of our own? Intoxicated with unbroken success, we have become too self-sufficient to feel the necessity of redeeming and preserving grace. And then listen to this last thing. We're too proud to pray to the God that made us. Do you ever hear of a president talk like that? But that was Lincoln. And when he'd been an atheist for a little while, but he came back and he believed very strongly. Another thing he talked about several times, he said, I'm going to have to meet my God. I'm a trustee of my duties. I'm a trustee of this government. And I must stand before my God and tell him what kind of a job I did. That's a marvelous statement.
It sure is. Could you explain to the audience about the Thanksgiving Proclamation?
Thanksgiving?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Yes. He did make a proclamation of Thanksgiving, and that happened to be in October of 1964. He set aside a date for Thanksgiving Proclamation. Yes.
Right. Okay. And it sounds just as beautiful as the passage you just...
Oh, it's a beautiful passage, too.
Oh, yes, it is. Awesome.
Yes. I have all his proclamations. By the way, if anyone ever wants to email me, I'll mail you a copy of the proclamations and prayers that he made. My email address is plain plostergaard at sbcglobal.net. And I'll mail you a copy of a little booklet with all his prayers and proclamations in it.
Could you give your email address one more time, a little slower?
I sure will. plostergaard, that's Ostergard, at sbcglobal.net.
And the title of your book?
And the title of my book is The Inspired Wisdom of Abraham Lincoln.
Wonderful.
How Faith Shaped an American President and Changed the Course of a Nation.
Well, I always learn a great deal when I talk to you, It's a lot of fun. It's very informative. I hope the audience will listen to
it. I hope so, too.
And download
and always,
the show.
They can always write any question you have. Just write to that address, and I'll answer. And lastly, I'm sorry I didn't give you a better question about the confiscation. I need to do a little more study and mail something back to you on that. I'll try.
No, what our questions and answers have exposed is that we have different perspectives, and what is interesting to me may not be interesting to you. So there's a reason why you didn't delve into the Confiscation Act, and it's okay, you know. I think I learned a great deal. I think the listeners have. We appreciate that we all have different interests. So
thank you very much. Please do not apologize
for that. And come back. We want to have you back on. Like I said, this, you're one of my favorite guests. And your book, I have it. It's a great book. And I think all teachers, don't be afraid, public school teachers, to purchase the book and to use the book. When, you know, just do the right thing and teach these children the truth, and you won't have a problem. So we're going to end this interview on that note, and we will have you back on.
And thank you so very much for being so nice. You're
not a
very kind hostess. Thank you, ma'am.
No problem.
Goodbye.
Good night. Bye-bye.